Right. So let me first thank the organizers for inviting me here and for giving me the opportunity to talk about some new results that only fit marginally, okay, with a workshop, with a conference. But I promise that at the end of the talk, I'll use the word intertwine. So yeah, so I'll introduce a new topological theory of finite lifetime quasi-particles in correlated electron systems when, due to the interactions, electrons acquire a finite lifetime. And I'll describe the application of this theory to semi metals, Dirac materials in two and three dimensions. We'll see that due to the quasi-particle scattering, the lifetime effect, in fact, completely reshapes the dispersion at low energy. And then I will explore the implication of this topological theory in the context of cuprates. So let me first acknowledge my collaborators. The main results was done in collaboration with Vlad Kozy, my student, who is also here. This work is still being written up, which hopefully will appear this month. And the mathematical aspect of this problem, this topological theory, is written up in this paper with a first-year graduate student, Hui Tao Shen, also with postdoc Bo Zhen in photonic optics group in MIT. In fact, I got inspired when Bo Zhen showed me his results on photonic crystals a year ago. And we will see that sort of topology unifies very different branches of physics. So over the last 10 years or so, there's been remarkable progress in understanding quantum phases of matter from the perspective of topology. After the discovery of topological insulars, a wide variety of topological phases has been found, including wild sand metals, Chern insulators, and et cetera. And they give rise to very interesting phenomenology, such as chiral anomaly, the zero-field quantized Hall effect, and also leads to new excitations, such as Majorana fermions. And one thing I want to emphasize is that in all these different phases of matter, the topology here really refers to the topological nature of the zero-temperature ground state. Okay, we say that a phase of matter is topological, a quantum state of matter is topological, if its ground state wave function can be characterized by some topological invariant. If the wave function has some invariant properties, that does not change under perturbations. The other lesson we learned is that topological materials are actually widespread. Okay, some of these topological materials are, you know, what we know since the very early days of solid state physics, such as bismuth, samarium hexafluoride, which is potentially a topological quantum insulator. Previously, they are unrecognized. Okay, but now, with a new understanding, there are very different materials with very different phenomenology can be understood in a unified way. A lot of us were interested in correlated electron systems, whether topology can give some fresh insight into some of the puzzling phenomena in correlated electron systems. But here, one thing that I like to emphasize, at least it seems to me, is that sometimes in correlated electron systems, a complex phenomena appears at finite temperature, even when the zero temperature ground states are relatively simple. Okay, so for example, the big mystery in this cuprate phase diagram is a pseudo gap phase, whereas some of the prominent phases at zero temperature are by now understood, like the D-wave superconductivity and antiferromagnetism. So complexity emerges at finite temperature, at least in some of these systems. And here there's a lot of discussion whether it's a finite temperature is a crossover or is it a sharp phase transition. So now this brings us a challenge to applying the tools of topology, because you know, since the pioneering work of Thales, we have always been talking about topology of phases of matter at zero temperature, and that's for good reason. On the sort of the mathematical aspect, the topological invariant we write down are characterizing the quantum wave functions, which is a zero temperature concept. And on the physical side, that when you heat things up, we know that many topological phases, in fact, lose their identity. Gauge theory in 2+1 dimension become confined. And you know, when you heat it up, topological phase transition at zero temperature turn into some crossovers. So apparently topology is lost. So this brings me to the outline of the talk. Here, I'm going to use topology as a tool to study not zero temperature phases, but instead quasi-particles. Okay. So in this sense, this notion of topology can be perhaps generalized or liberated. And I'll introduce a topological theory that takes into account the finite lifetime of quasi-particles. And finite lifetime is exclusive to interacting electron systems. Okay? So for non-interacting electron system, even at finite temperature, even at finite temperature, the lifetime is infinite. On the other hand, for interacting electron systems, generically at finite temperature, there will be a finite lifetime. Or even at zero temperature, if we talk about spectroscopy, we probe excitations at finite energy. Those excitations would also have a finite lifetime. So the two main results I'll discuss, that the presence of these lifetime effects fundamentally changes quasi-particle energy momentum dispersion in a wide variety of materials. I'll show examples of Dirac semiconductors, and it creates new topological quasi-particles with unusual dispersion that are topologically protected. Okay, the presence of these topological quasi-particles are independent of perturbations. And then I'll explore some potential application to the broken symmetry state of cuprates. So let's just remind you that in the interacting system, there's inelastic scattering of quasi-particles due to electron-electron interaction, as well as electron-phonon interaction. And also, even at zero temperature, there's also elastic scattering with impurity. This also leads to both of these kind of interactions leads to a finite quasi-particle lifetime. And when the lifetime is finite, the self-energy for the quasi-particle becomes a non-Hermitian. Okay? And when we talk about the spectroscopy of interacting electron system, very often we deal with Green's function. And the Green's function has this structure, 1 over omega minus h, where h, we can call it a quasi-particle Hamiltonian. It includes both the Bloch Hamiltonian that defines the band structure, as well as the self-energy that comes entirely from interactions. Okay, so this self-energy is generally non-Hermitian because of the finite lifetime. As a result, the quasi-particle Hamiltonian also is non-Hermitian, and its energy spectrum are complex. The real part of the energy tells us about quasi-particle energy dispersion as a function of k. The imaginary part of this complex energy tells us the quasi-particle inverse lifetime. So then this naturally brings the question, what is the topological structure of these non-Hermitian Hamiltonians in momentum space? So this kind of topology would be a natural generalization of topological band theory of non-interacting electrons that people have so far discussed. Okay? And here, this is really a general framework. Quasi-particles can be electrons, can be magnons, and can even be fractional excitations. Whenever you have a quasi-particle which disperses with momentum, we can talk about its band structure. And the energies of these quasi-particles would be complex, the real part and imaginary part. So let me start with a simple example of a Dirac fermion in two dimensions. And I will consider systems where this Dirac fermion are formed from two bands of different nature. For example, there's a light electron band with a small mass, a heavy hole band with large mass, and this corresponds to the diagonal elements of this 2x2 Hamiltonian. And this kind of band inversion is very common in a variety of systems. And suppose the two orbitals, the two bands, let's say at k equals 0, have opposite reflection eigenvalues with respect to ky, then the hybridization between these two orbitals must be proportional to ky. So there's a p-wave hybridization form factor. And then we obtain two low-energy Dirac cones. Okay, so this leads to this Hamiltonian that's shown here. So the diagonal elements correspond to these two orbitals with different symmetries. Now, let's think about lifetimes of in this Dirac fermion system in the presence of interactions, electron-electron or electron-phonon. Then, because of these two bands have a completely different nature, they should have different lifetimes, which I call gamma 1 and gamma 2. And gamma 1 and gamma 2 are generically momentum and frequency dependent, but I'm only interested at the end of the day, physics near the Dirac point, so I can take the self-energy to be constant. So this kind of a Dirac dispersion appears in many systems. It appears in heavy fermions, where the two orbitals that are involved are completely different. One is light electrons, of the itinerant electrons. The other is typically f orbitals. It also appears in nick heights, as was a beautiful theory by Donghai Li and Ashwin and Ying Ran, showing that. And this prediction has since then been observed in mission experiments on some of the nick tides. It also appears in transition metal dichalcogenides in a so-called 1T prime structure, where in that case, one of the bands is p orbitals, the other is the d orbitals. Now, I want to caution that this two-lifetime effect does not arrive in graphene, because in graphene, the Dirac point comes from two orbitals that form a doublet. So in that case, symmetry guarantees it has to be a single lifetime instead of two lifetimes. But many other materials should have this effect. And as a concrete example, we consider electron-phonon interaction in such a Dirac same metal in two dimensions, and we couple these electrons to the simplest model of dispersionless phonons at frequency omega naught, optical phonons, and the two components that form the Dirac fermion have different electron-phonon coupling constants. I call lambda 1, lambda 2, and the one-loop calculation shows that this is a self-energy. Okay, and we're interested. The mu is a chemical potential, epsilon is the frequency that we are interested in. So if I'm interested in the physics near the Dirac point, we can set epsilon equal to minus mu. And then the lifetime at this energy, at the Dirac point energy, is generic and non-zero, both at the finite temperature and even at zero temperature if the Dirac point is away from Fermi energy. Okay? So generally, it reduces to this simple form. So now, let's look at what this model gives us. So the Bloch Hamiltonian, the two-dimensional Dirac fermion, the self-energy with two lifetimes. Combining them, the quasi-particle Hamiltonian can be written in this way. Apart from a constant, it contains a sigma z term and sigma x term. Now, you see explicitly that this is non-Hermitian because the sigma z term has a complex prefactor. So the little gamma is the difference of the two lifetimes, and the capital gamma is the sum of the two lifetimes. So this capital gamma is just give you a simple decay constant added to all energy eigenstates. It's uninteresting, but you see that difference of the two lifetimes, it's a sigma proportional to the sigma z operator. It does not simply commute with the Bloch Hamiltonian. So as a result, there's an interesting interplay between self-energy effects and band structure effects. So this is energy dispersion by just diagonalizing this 2x2 matrix. Let's look at the plots. So what's plotted on the left is the real part of the complex energy as a function of momentum kx and ky. The vertical axis is energy. And you see that the dispersion is completely unexpected. So for Dirac fermion, we know that conduction and valence bands touch at a single point. Whereas here, the conduction and the valence bands touch on an open arc. Okay, on an open arc. The bands stick together. And this is impossible in a Hermitian band structure without lifetimes, because we know that band crossings are completely unstable in two dimensions without any symmetry. So here I'm always dealing with systems with no symmetry. So we see this band sticking effect on the open arc, and this open arc terminates at two points along the y-axis. It's determined by the difference of the two lifetimes divided by the Dirac velocity. So if the Dirac velocity is small, the termination points increases further away from the original Dirac point. This is a line cut parallel to this, cutting through this line. And you see that the conduction valence bands stick at the same energy. And beyond the terminating point, the energy increases very rapidly as a square root of energy. Again, this is something you don't see, this kind of sharp rise of the dispersion that's not seen in any systems with just simple band structure. Now, with this kind of a modified dispersion, reconstructed dispersion, we see the density of states changes dramatically from linear in energy that vanishes at zero energy to a constant. Okay, we now have a line at zero energy. And this actually leads to some extreme anisotropy because the velocity along the line is zero. Okay. We can also look at the imaginary part of this complex energy spectrum, which is the inverse lifetime. So I'm plotting now the inverse lifetime just for the conduction bands, okay, for the higher energy bands. And you see that this inverse lifetime changes very abruptly across this band sticking line. And one way to understand is that, as you move from the left side to the right side in this range of momentum ky, the wave function abruptly changes character from orbital 1 to orbital 2. And because the two orbitals have different lifetimes, you have an abrupt change of the inverse scattering rate. So so the terminating point of this open arc is special. At this point, this non-Hermitian Hamiltonian becomes defective. This is a mathematical terminology. It has basically means that this non-Hermitian Hamiltonian has a single eigenstate, okay, instead of two. For Hermitian Hamiltonians, we can have degeneracies, but even at the degeneracy point, there are two independent eigenstates. Here, there's only a single eigenstate at this energy. So one example is to think of the sigma plus operator, a 2x2 matrix. The sigma plus operator only has a single eigenstate. And everywhere away from these two defective points, the complex energies are different from each other. So in this sense, we can say this spectrum is gapped everywhere except these two exceptional points in terms of complex energies. But of course, in terms of the real part of energy, the bands actually stick on an extended line. And we will see in a minute that this line, in fact, topologically protected, as well as the defective points at its end. So there's a lot of literature in a completely different areas of physics that people study non-Hermitian degeneracies. And this kind of a phenomena that eigenvalues can merge. Okay, the reduction of the number of linearly independent eigenstates at special points is called eigenvalue coalescence. It was perhaps first found by Keldysh long ago. There's a nice review article by Barry in 2004. And in recent years, there's a lot of interest in these kind of non-Hermitian degeneracies in photonics community, as well as in optomechanical, many interesting papers. And in particular, this one from Marion's group at MIT, led by Bo Zhen, got me inspired. So now, in all these systems, I want to mention that the non-Hermitian nature comes from the open systems. These systems couple to environments, such as bath, or the systems are being driven. Whereas here, what I'm talking about here is that in the interacting many-body system, the underlying macroscopic Hamiltonian is Hermitian, it's always Hermitian, which is perhaps why people don't think about this before. But the important observation is that the one-body Hamiltonian for quasi-particles is naturally non-Hermitian due to the interaction-induced finite lifetime. Now, let me now discuss the topological aspect of these exceptional points, of these defective points. And the simplest way to understand this is to think about a number of degeneracies. How many parameters one need to tune to hit a level degeneracy? For Hermitian Hamiltonians, we know that without any symmetry, we know that we need to tune three parameters to hit a degeneracy point, because a generic 2x2 Hermitian Hamiltonian can be written in this form, A dot sigma, where the vector A's are real. So only when A is 0, 0, 0, you get degeneracy. So this is why wild points are topologically stable in three dimensions, but not in two dimensions. On the other hand, for non-Hermitian Hamiltonians, the remarkable thing is that we only need to tune two parameters to hit a degeneracy, or more precisely, to hit an eigenvalue coalescence point where the Hamiltonian becomes defective. And you can see it from here, a generic non-Hermitian Hamiltonian takes the form A plus IB dot sigma. The A and B are two different vectors, both are real. And we get eigenvalue coalescence when A dot B is equal to 0. For example, when we have sigma X plus I sigma Y. Okay. And we also need the two vectors to have equal length. So there are only two conditions that need to be satisfied. So therefore, only two parameters is enough to tune to a defective points. So this immediately implies that there should be a topologically stable defective points in two dimensions. And in three dimensions, defective points should form topologically stable lines. So let's look at the end of the defective of this open arc, which is a defective point, and linearize this Hamiltonian near the defective points. So here I'm writing down the most general Hamiltonian near defective points. When k is 0, the h is proportional sigma plus, so it's defective there. Away from that point, this is the energy spectrum. Is the coefficients c and x, c, y are some linear function of the parameters, like velocities. And if we again look at the dispersion, we see that there's a line that comes out of this defective point, and on that line, the real part of the energy stick with each other. It's just replotting everything. In the previous Dirac Fermi model, there are two exceptional points connected by a line. Here, I'm only looking at a spectrum in the vicinity of a single exceptional point. So you see this line here. And now, what's interesting about the topological aspect of exceptional point is that if we move around a single exceptional point in momentum space and monitor the complex energy spectrum on this loop, we see that the two eigenvalues, E plus and E minus, they swap, they exchange with each other. Okay, E plus go to E minus after you go around exceptional points, E minus go to E plus. I mean, this is basically because of the square root, give you a branch cut. It cannot be avoided. So this actually leads us to a topological index. Okay, despite all these studies, it turned out the topological index for exceptional points has not been properly written before. This topological index is simply given by this. We take the energy difference between any pair of bands. Again, these energies are not complex. And we look at the vorticity of this energy difference. So we have a complex number which changes with a parameter. We can ask if you move around a closed loop, what's the phase winding of this complex number? So this phase winding defines a topological invariant, the same as vorticity. Now what's interesting is that here, when I go around a loop in momentum space, E plus and E minus swap with each other, so this topological index is plus or minus 1/2. So exceptional points carry topological point charge plus minus 1/2. And when, again, this kind of eigenvalue switching guarantees that anywhere along that path, there has to be a line where the real part of the energies degenerate. Whenever two eigenvalues swap in complex plane, their real part has to be degenerate at some point. The same topological analysis actually also tells us another types of degeneracy points, which we call hybrid and vortex points. So when you merge two exceptional points with the same topological charge, 1/2 and 1/2, it gives rise to what we call the vortex point. At that point, the spectrum is non-defective, but it still carries a topological charge, meaning 1/2 plus 1/2 is 1. On the other hand, when we merge a pair of exceptional points with opposite charge, at that merging point, we get a hybrid spectrum, which is linear in one direction and a square root in the other direction. And because this hybrid point does not carry any topological charge anymore, it can be further gapped. Okay, so now how do we relate these mathematics to observables? So we know that the Green's function is directly related to the spectral function that can be measured in uppers. So if we look at the spectral function summed over the two orbitals with equal weight, so I'm not playing with any matrix element effect here, just sum over the two bands, it's directly keeps track of the complex eigenvalues of the spectrum. And if we take a line cut in the x direction, we see that there are two bands which cross each other, but their intensity are very different because they have different lifetimes. On the other hand, if we take a line cut in the perpendicular direction where this open arc appears, and we see that, again, the Dirac point has been extended into an arc. So this is really a Fermi arc. And this Fermi arc has nothing to do with wild points. I'm talking about a pure two-dimensional system. And also, at the exceptional points, E plus and E minus become identical. So the spectral function summed over two bands become a single Lorentzian. So this is one of the signatures of these exceptional points. We can also look at the constant energy contour at a fixed energy, plotting the spectral function as in momentum space. And this is the spectral function at the energy of the exceptional point. We see an open arc. And above the Dirac point energy, one side of the Fermi surface has high intensity, the other side has low intensity because of two different lifetimes. And below that energy, this asymmetry flips. Okay, this would be signatures of two lifetimes that leads to exceptional points. So one can, in fact, write down a more general model. We have Dirac fermions, which can have a mass, finite mass, and we can have finite lifetimes, which enters into all possible polymatrices, sigma z, sigma x, sigma y. So what I want to just say is that in the absence of self-energy effects, we know that when the direct mass changes in sign, we have a topological phase transition. The gap closes at a single point, m equals 0. But when there are lifetime effects for non-Hermitian Hamiltonians, the single point gives rise to an extended phase. So I start here with a gap spectrum where complex energies are everywhere unequal. I hit through this phase boundary, create a pair of exceptional points. And as I tune the mass, the pair of exceptional points move, and eventually they annihilate each other, and the spectrum becomes gapped again. Okay. So exception points are really generic. Okay. Despite its name, they should be ubiquitous. It's topologically stable, and it appears in the expanded region of the phase diagram. In three dimensions, the exceptional points will form loops. So the simplest model is that we start with a wild side metal, and we add a generic self-energy with two lifetimes. Then a loop of exceptional points appear. Let me skip this. Okay, so now let me move on in the last few minutes to this is exceptional points in supermatters, in a D-wave supermatter with point nodes. As we know that the nodal quasiparticles in the D-wave supermatter are also Dirac fermions, but here the two components of the Dirac fermion are associated with states at momentum k and minus k, opposite sides of the Fermi surface. If we are able to introduce a self-energy with two lifetimes like this, then again, exceptional points occur. Now here, one difference is that in the context of supermatter, what has been measured is not the sum over electron and whole spectral function, but just the electron part of the spectral function, which is G inverse, which is a Green's function, the 1-1 component of it. Now, if I take this model that I just described with two different lifetimes and invert it to obtain a spectral function, the electron part of that spectral function has exactly this form. Okay? And interestingly, this form is exactly the one that's phenomenologically proposed by Mike Norman and collaborators in a very early study of Fermi arcs in D-wave supernatant in cuprates. But back then, as a phenomenological model, they interpreted gamma 1 and gamma 2 as so-called single particle lifetime and a pair lifetime. Whereas here, in this new understanding, the gamma 1 and gamma 2 are lifetimes associated with states of momentum k and minus k. Okay. Now, back then, the two lifetime was proposed in order to fit the Alpha's data. I'll show you. One thing I want to say is that if you compare to one lifetime and two lifetime models, the one lifetime meaning that the two lifetime gamma 1 equal gamma 2. The difference is subtle. Okay, that's a caution. In one lifetime model, one can also get a Fermi arc. Okay, with two lifetime models, you know, there's some differences, which I'll describe next. At the exceptional points, if we only look at the electron spectral function, not the sum of the two, then the exceptional points are special because the spectral function contains not only a first-order pole, but also a second-order pole. Okay. Now, after I arrived at this conference, I had a great discussion with Hashimoto, and he taught me why these previous experiments use two lifetimes for fitting. If you look at this, is a spectral function at a low temperature inside the superconducting state. This is a spectral function at a momentum that's away from the nodes. So you see that there's a gap inside the superconducting states because there's no Fermi arcs inside the superconducting state. And this gap is pretty hard gap. But on the other hand, the width of this peak is much broader. Now in the single lifetime model, the gap filling is tied together with the peak broadening. So the gamma, as you increase this lifetime, the peak becomes broader, but also the gap is filled. So this doesn't fit well with the data. So instead, this two lifetime fits much better. And in this is the recent paper showing that how the two lifetimes, two inverse scattering rates, evolve with temperature. Okay. From early days till this day, inside the supercondensing state, the two lifetimes are always different from each other. Now, as I already said, in the spin singlet matter, the two lifetimes should be equal to each other if there's a symmetry between k and minus k, such as time reversal or inversion. And in fact, in the early paper by Chubukov and collaborators, showed that the single lifetime model can be derived from Elliott-Ashbrook theory in the presence of fermion boson coupling. So the two lifetime effects is only possible when the symmetry between k and minus k is broken. it means that time reversal or inversion is broken. And we heard in this conference, one of such states is Chandrasekhar's loop current state. And microscopically, this loop current state should also lead to an energy difference between k and minus k, as pointed out by Ellsberg and Steve Kibelson, also by Santil. And if we take this energy difference and we add some scattering, either by disorder or by inelastic scattering, then the two lifetimes will become unequal. Okay. And so this leads to this conclusion here that symmetry breaking, time reversal and inversion symmetry breaking, is expected to lead to a topological exceptional points in cuprates. Let me just summarize that when we think about an interacting system, the Hamiltonian for quasi-particles really is non-Hermitian. There's band structure part and self-energy part. And the energy of this non-Hermitian Hamiltonian has a real part and imaginary part, telling us about the dispersion and the quasi-particle inverse lifetime, like the yin and yang of quasi-particles. And the Hermitian and anti-Hermitian part do not simply just add to each other, because generically they do not commute. So the interplay between these two parts, they can dramatically lead to a change in quasi-particle dispersion, especially in systems with two bands near the Fermi energy. And concrete examples are Dirac star metals. In the presence of two lifetime, a band touching becomes a line, terminates at exceptional points, which is topologically robust. And in cuprates, and perhaps there's room for exceptional points as well. So in future, one thing I'd like to advertise is that over the last decade, there's been a lot of sort of a marriage between band theory, topological band theory, and numerical methods like DFT, very powerful in predicting new topological materials. But now if we talk about the self-energy effects, right, we'll need a more advanced numerical methods, such as dense dynamical mean field theory. And as I showed you, that the great thing about these topological set points, they are absolutely stable. They do not require any fine-tuning. A simple lifetime that's independent of momentum and frequency is already enough to generate them. And we are now also exploring the thermodynamic transport evidence of these exceptional quasi-particles. Okay, stop. Thank you for attention.
Very nice talk. So, but I understand that the non-Hermitian Hamiltonian is actually basically deduced from the poles of the single particle Green's function, right? And the imaginary part of the self-energy, which gives rise to the lifetime effect, is usually frequency dependent and momentum dependent. I think the frequency dependence here would particularly give you more complicated effects, because then you actually need to self-consistently solve the eigenvalue problem.
Yeah, absolutely correct.
That'll definitely give you some additional effects, which
yes,
I don't understand.
I totally agree, yeah. Yes. That if we further take into account the frequency dependence, the physics is even richer. But here you see that in the case of electron-phonon coupling, at least, with this simple model, and I believe this is generally true, if you take electron-phonon interaction at least and at finite temperature, then you see that this self-energy is indeed frequency dependent, epsilon is frequency, but it's non-zero in the limit of zero frequency and it's analytic there. Now, because the exceptional points occur in the vicinity of the energy of the Dirac point and in the vicinity of the Dirac point momentum, so as the simplest model, I'm just taking the self-energy to be momentum frequency independent. That's right, yeah, exactly, yeah. Of course, I totally agree that in other models, there will be momentum and frequency dependence. But again, this is a very generic phenomenon, right? This is, topology is doesn't require fine-tuning.
And question for clarification. Speaking about cuprates, there was a story with gamma 1 equal to gamma 2.
Yes.
Both are temperature dependent. This is sort of artificial arcs, which don't exist in reality, but appear at finite temperature. In your case, when you take two different lifetimes, do you have a specific prediction of what should be different?
Right. So one thing I said, which has already come to the attention of experimentalists before me, is that, for example, in the semiconducting states, two lifetimes fit the data better. It's this gap filling versus peak block. Yeah, you're asking qualitative. Yeah, this is one subtle thing that because we cannot measure the complex energies of this non-Hermitian Hamiltonian directly, what we can measure is a spectral function. And the spectral function is related to these complex energies, right? So in the case of, let's say, a direct sign metal, maybe to leading order, we can neglect matrix element effects. Then we just have the sum of the spectral function for the two bands that can be directly measured. And then you see that the poles directly tell you the these complex energies. So the effect is indeed more subtle. So one need to look at not only the peaks in the spectral function, but also the line shape of the spectral function. Okay. Now, and one caution I want to make is that, for example, we see explicitly that in this model, the peak of the spectral function does not always coincide with the real part of the quasi-particle energy. So for example, if you remember that if I'm going along this open arc, at the end of this Fermi arc, the real part of the quasi-particle energy degenerate, but beyond that point, the real part of the quasi-particle energy becomes split. They're split in a square root fashion. But if you look at the spectral function, everywhere on this open arc, you have a single peak as zero energy. But even you go slightly beyond the end of this arc, the spectral function is still peak as zero energy. You go further beyond, it splits into two peaks. So this is an example why, and this sort of makes sense. If you have two energies which are very close, but the width is larger than the energy separation, from a spectral point of view, it just looks like a single peak. Right? That's why to deduce the existence of these exceptional points are non-trivial. But you know, nowadays, as the spectroscopy tool is much more advanced, so I hope that this can be studied. And also, one remark is that here, again, this theory is very general. When we apply it to electrons, the spectroscopy tool would be a photon emission. It can also be applied to magnons, and there is a neutron scattering.
So how do you decide if you have a quasi-particle or not? Because if you have too much interaction, then you lose quasi-particles.
Yes.
And then how does the topological number break down?
Yeah, this is a great question. You know, at finite temperature, if I do uppers, I very often see some dispersing bands, even in correlated electron system. This tells me there are still quasi-particles.
But in principle, how do you decide, like theoretically, where your threshold is, whether or not you have a quasi-particle?
As long as, yeah, so for example, Z, right? Does the quasi-particle weight go to zero? Right. If the quasi-particle weight goes to, if Z goes to zero, then I can say there's no quasi-particles.
As you change, and at some point this topological number should disappear if you don't have
That's the thing. Let me clarify this. As you see that I'm talking about topology of quasi particles, right? Because the quasi particle spectrum, as you change the temperature, the inverse the scattering rate changes with temperature. So this changes the location of these exceptional points in momentum space. So it could be that I start with a direct sign metal where there's no exceptional points. As I introduce quasi-particle scattering, as I raise temperature, the exception point starts. They are close to the original direct point. As I further increase temperature, they move more and more apart from each other in momentum space. And maybe finally, they annihilate with each other. These are all possible scenarios.
Yeah, so the spectrum in the nodal superconductor, one of the things that we noted is that when you broke time reversal and inversion and forgot about lifetimes, you lost the node. The node is unstable.
The nodes are shifted in energy. They are still there.
They're shifted in energy, but they're not at the Fermi.
Not at the Fermi energy, correct.
So instead, you get a Fermi pocket.
You get a Fermi pocket, yes.
Yeah. So now what happens here when
So you see, the nodes are still there. It's at shifted energy. So then would mean that this model that I have still applies. But now, instead of looking at the zero frequency, right, I can look at the self energy at the energy of the shifted nodes.
Yeah, I guess I was just asking if we say look very close to the Fermi energy.
Right. I don't have a plot here. I mean, There's a, yeah, okay, let's see. So there will be a contour. So this contour actually I summed over both electron, you know, this is the sum of the two bands.
Yeah.
Now in the SUNAC context, what is measured is only the electron part. So I don't have the plot right now. You know, it's, I can show you later.
Okay, but we would get an arc at the Fermi energy or something like that.
Yes, we'll get an arc, definitely, yeah, at Fermi energy, yes.
Maybe, could you comment on what happens in a magnetic field in such a system? Did you think about it?
The magnetic state?
Magnetic field, are there different Landau levels in that sense? We have been seeing these very wild magneto transport data over a couple of days. Is this?
Yeah, one thing that we are certainly interested in is sort of introduce the magnetic field couples to quasi-particles, either in dioxide metals and in cuprates. You know, in the presence of these two lifetimes, what are these effects? Yeah, nothing I can say right now. I mean, we haven't done that. But absolutely, once we have these two lifetimes, many of the transport and thermodynamic properties I expect needs to be revisited.
So you haven't mentioned dissipative systems at all.
Open systems, then. Yeah.
So I was wondering why. So imagine you have some species-selective dissipative term. So you, but do you in your Hamiltonians do you need like the imaginary part entering with both signs, and this is why you never mentioned about dissipative systems?
So as long as you have dissipative system, the two lifetimes gamma one, gamma two, both has to be positive.
Okay.
And that is satisfied in all. Sorry. Here I have. So if you take the sum and the difference of the two lifetimes, then this capital gamma is always bigger than the small gamma.
Mm-hmm.
So the capital gamma is an overall decay. It just adds an imaginary term to every energy, you know, in an equal way. It's uninteresting, but this gives you a broadening. Certainly, it gives you broadening. The small gamma, which is the difference of two lifetimes, is the interesting part.
So that's the answer why dissipative systems might not be predominantly
It works. Dissipative certainly works. Dissipative systems just mean that this condition is satisfied. The capital gamma is bigger than small gamma.
But when capital gamma is much bigger, then you won't see much of
everything is blurred. But these exception points are still there. It's just blurred.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, in the case of photonics systems. I have these references here, I think. Yeah. So, for example, in this paper, right, they're dealing with an open system which is subject to both decay to the environment and the pumping. So that's an example where the imaginary part of self energy, in fact, can cross to the positive axis. And so there's actually a lot of literature about lasing, you know, lasing out of the exceptional points in those communities.
So I guess my question is related to Lucy's question. So I guess your topological invariant is some invariant for some truncated density matrix at finite.
For quality, but not for density matrix. It's a one-body.
Yeah. So some truncated density matrix in some subspace of the full density matrix.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, right? You can, I guess you are saying that the Green's function is related to the one-body density matrix.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
So my question is, to what extent do you think this invariant can be used, say, to classify different finite temperature many-body systems?
Yeah, this is an excellent question. No, I don't think this classifies the phases of matter at all at finite temperature. That's why I said in the beginning, right? You know, for decades, we have been always thinking about topology of phases. But at finite temperature, you know, whether how to characterize first in a finite dimension, many of the topological phases lose its strict identity, as we know in two dimensions.
There could be some new invariance that there could be new invariance that we didn't.
There could be, in three dimensions. I think yes, could be. You know, we know that for example, Z2 gauge theory remains deconfined for some finite temperature in three dimensions. In 2Ds, I think it's generally believed that, although I don't know a proof, but it's generally believed that this topological identity is lost because, you know, 2D topological phases only have point-like excitations, right? So they generally will proliferate at finite temperature. But here, you know, I think more relevant question for experiments, especially for correlated electron systems, is this kind of quasi-particle, for example, spectrum, which can be directly probed in photoemission. So I'm taking this perspective that we can use topology to characterize quasi-particle spectrum. Yeah. So in that sense, we can sort of liberate the notion of topology from just studying phases.
Yeah. I wonder whether there's something in alignment going on, right? So self-energies are not created by God, right? They are supposed to come out of a real many-body computation where you can demonstrate that your perturbations theory. Let me first formulate a question.
Yes.
Where you just sum up all your diagrams and you figure out that there are no singularities. Now, when I see your spectrum, right, normally this is taken as a signal, right, that you're basically hitting a singularity, meaning it's completely overdamped, right? You have no real part left, there's only an imaginary part left. And normally they're telling you, you have to go up higher in your perturbation theory, and I bet you will find out some vertex correction that's exploding in your face.
Yes, so for the
case... So how can you prove that it's not happening in this circumstance?
Yeah, so for the case of electron-electron interaction, I agree with you, but we do have a calculation, thanks to Vlad, who is here, that for the case of electron-phonon interaction, we have a microscopic calculation. Where is it? Here. Yeah. We have a microscopic calculation that direct fermion.
I think we might need to stop the discussion since the speaker's taxi is here.
Thanks. Sorry about this.
It's back there, I guess.
You can answer questions on your
right. Thank you.